Hello and welcome to another episode of Betting People. This week we've got a very special guest from the Racing Post. It's journalist Kitty Trice. Kitty, how are you?
Good, thank you. How are you doing?
All well here at Kijani HQ. Thank you very much for coming on board. Lots of interesting questions to ask you. But first things first, how did you get into racing?
So I come from a fairly horsey background on my mother's side. She had horses or ponies growing up. She went to pony club and I rode as a child. You know, I went from pony club to doing a lot of showing, and then it was about sort of around 2007-08 that, you know, racing was on my radar, and I went from there, specialising in that really. It's been a great adventure.
Did you have any ambitions to become a jockey, anything like that?
No, I was realistic enough from an early age that I was never going to be, you know, a top event rider or a jockey. But it's always something I've just had huge passion about, and I've always loved sort of reading about, and I've enjoyed my writing as well. So it sort of went from there really to write about it. It made a lot of sense, I guess.
Did anybody in the racing industry actually act as an inspiration for you when it comes to writing?
There's so many people. I mean, yeah, you've got the likes of Alistair Down, who just writes some marvellous pieces, and, you know, Steve Dennis is obviously brilliant. I mean, he wrote a piece about Denman when he died, and that, you know, I don't often cry, but all over pieces anyway, but that was, you know, that really was very stirring. It was a beautiful piece, but there's just so many to name. Those are just two. But obviously, there's some excellent journalists around, you know, like Chris Cook, and obviously, like, you know, I've been lucky enough to work with the likes of Lily Head, and it's just a great time for some very talented writers.
Speaking on from those talented writers and all those people, you obviously learned quite a lot from working alongside them. What are the lessons that you've taken away from being around people like Lee Mottershead in the Racing Post newsroom?
Well, I think, firstly, it's all about just keeping calm, taking it one step at a time. I mean, you know, racing's such a unique sport. Sometimes it can be over in sort of, you know, 30 seconds, less than, you know, more than that, but with these 5 furlong sprints and such. But it's all about just enjoying the experience, taking it all in, finding the right angle for a story, you know, because there's often an angle to a story. There's, you know, whether it's 100 to 1 winner, or whether it's, you know, a smaller trainer, or whether it's landmark winner, there's always something to write about. So just finding the right angle, I'd say.
And going back to racing in general, which racing memories do you have from that early sort of period that inspire you? Because around that time, we were blessed to see these greats sort of every season. We had See the Stars, we had, I think, not too far after Frankel, we also had Zarkava. Are there any sort of really stirring racing memories that inspired you to get even more involved with the sport?
Well, I got more into jumps at that stage. So obviously I loved watching Denman and Quarter Star. I mean, I admit I'm a huge Denman fan. I just loved the way he just absolutely demolished rivals at his best. He was just, you know, well named the tank. I've started to love the flat, you know, last 5-6 years, and we've actually been blessed. You know, obviously there was that golden era of See the Stars and Frankel, but we've been lucky to have, you know, Golden Horn and Enable, Cracksman, and those have been great horses as well. It's not a particular race, but it's just the memory of these very, very good horses. And obviously over the jumps we've had, you know, Sprinter Sacra and Altior, and, you know, all the Fahines and Annie Powers of this world. So it's just the individual horses, which, you know, I always love, you know, seeing all of them in action.
Now, you do a lot with regards to Bloodstock, and we'll talk about that in the rest of this interview, but I'm interested to know, how did you first get an interest really in breeding? And was it from family, or was it just through discovering racing, or was it a different path altogether?
So actually, I'd probably say the start of it was when I did a lot of showing. Like showing horses, it's all about the conformation and what the horse looks like and the type of horse. And I was always very interested in sort of, you know, the conformation of horses. You know, did they have the right elements to them? Did they, you know, did they have a good front on them, for instance, long or short back? And that was the start of it, really, because I think a lot about bloodstock is, you know, is the horse a good type? You know, is he typical of his sire, or, you know, whatnot? And so that was like the first bit. And then when I got into racing, you know, obviously all the flat side and sales, that sort of combined, really. So it's a sort of a cross discipline sort of interest, as it were. But it's fascinating. It's just so sort of, so many assets. There's just so many sort of different factions to it and factors, and yeah.
And going on from that, actually, I probably should ask, do you actually have a favourite sire?
Oh, gosh. I do. I'm a big fan of Make Believe. I think he's doing very, very well this season, you know, with Mishriff. And I think it's Rose of Kildare. She's won three group threes from 2 to 3. Obviously, we've got, you know, the big guns like Galileo, you know, Dubawi, Frankel, See the Stars. You've got to mention Kingman, I suppose, as well. He's having a storming year. I like Make Believe a lot. I'm a big fan of Far, what he's produced, given, you know, he's had his troubles. I think he's, you know, I think he's a very good sire, and obviously his father Pivotal is exceptional as well. So you've got to be excited by him, I think.
And last but not least, give us a sire or stallion to be looking forward to over the coming months and years.
This is going to be quite off centre, but I'm a big fan of Bated Breath. I just think at the price and what he's produced, like he's consistently produced mm-hmm. winners. He's great on a commercial level, but I also think he's capable of getting, you know, very smart types as well. Last year at Royal Ascot, I think he had 3 winners, and only like the very, very elite stallions like Galileo and Shamadal were above him. Shamadal, I think, was certainly above him. But I'd be interested to see. I mean, Golden Horn had a bit of a difficult start to the year because obviously we lost April and May, and his offspring always going to be better as 3-year-olds. So I'd be interested to see, you know, next year with his second crop of 3-year-olds, how they get on with you know, those months as well.
Fascinating. I'm sure our viewers and listeners will look forward to following them over the course of the next couple of seasons. Anyway, that's part one done. In part two, we'll be talking about your role at the Racing Post. Thanks very much, Kitty Trice.
Thank you.
Welcome back to part two of Betting People with Kitty Trice. Now, Kitty is a journalist at the Racing Post, but she's had quite the big job change recently. Kitty, tell us about your previous and new role.
So I'm currently still on the racing desk, racing editorial, and next week I'll be moving to Bloodstock. So it's still a journalist role, but essentially it'll be all the news in the breeding industry, all the latest sales reports, stallion movements, you know, mating plans, that sort of thing. And yeah, it's a new, and it's obviously going to be quite a challenging time given coronavirus, but I'm incredibly excited to get started.
And for those of the viewers who might not necessarily think that much about Bloodstock, or who might not go to Bloodstock when they visit the Racing Post, there's plenty of people who watch Betting People will go either for greyhounds or for racing or for industry news. Explain to us the importance, really, of the team there and that effort going forward.
Well, we sort of try and bring the, you know, the breeding industry to our pages. You know, it's a very important role because obviously without the breeding of these horses, there'd be no racing. Without the people choosing, you know, the owners, the stud farms choosing these matings, the owner breeders, you know, like Dali, Khalid Abdullah, those sorts of people, obviously we wouldn't have an industry, and it's important to get everyone ranging from them to the smaller owners and stud farms, let the wider audience know of their plans. And I think if people have a chance to sort of look at pedigrees and look at what we do, we try and just bring it forward to people who don't necessarily know as much but are keen to learn more. It's a fascinating sort of area of racing.
And obviously with that in mind, if somebody was looking to learn a bit more about breeding in general, where would you encourage them to start? Are there any good books, any good resources for somebody who would want to maybe incorporate breeding into their betting, particularly with, say, two-year-old races, for example?
Yeah, so the Racing Post, we've got a betting guide and there's a pedigree section in there. But for sort of non-betting purposes, there's an excellent book called A Beginner's Guide to Pedigrees. I might have got that wrong, but it's on Amazon. It's a great read. There's also lots of different books on Wetherby's, like the Stallion Guide, which is all the registered stallions in Wetherby's, and that's a really good read as well, with pictures. And then there's a list of their offspring, that's who they're sired by, their dam, and it goes back, you know, to their grandsires, dams, etc. So that's a really useful companion tool as well.
And obviously with the bloodstock industry, like all others, facing a bit of a crunch due to the extraordinary year we've had, are there any issues that you'll be particularly keen to cover and bring to your readers when you start next week?
Well, I just think we need to be aware that obviously it's going to be a very tricky time. Like the lower tiers of the market will find it difficult. I'm sure, you know, Tassel's Book One catalogue was released. I mean, I'm sure there'll be little to no problems there because, you know, there's always supply and demand for these beautifully bred animals. But we just need to cover the fact that a lot of, you know, breeders, stud farms, they, you know, this is a difficult time for them, and we need to just keep on letting people know. I mean, it's going to be difficult for everyone, but that's an important issue. Obviously, it's kind of related, but like the prize money issue is not going away, and that affects sort of breeding as well, affects racing, and that, you know, there's so many sort of components that need addressing.
Another issue many racing fans and actually quite a few punters too have brought up in recent years to do with bloodstock is the needing to breed for speed, basically. Hugely successful sires who were either retired as juveniles or who were sprinters producing precocious horses. Do you think that we've gone possibly too far in that direction, and that we are at risk possibly of lacking diversity, basically, in the offering, in the horses that we're mainly producing?
In a short answer, yes. I mean, you can't really blame breeders or, you know, those buying them for wanting to breed these speedily bred horses because, you know, time is money. There's, you know, they're quicker to sort of get trained, be ready to race, whereas traditionally the middle distance horses, you know, they take longer to mature, you know, unsurprisingly, and therefore it's more a domain for the wealthy owner breeder. But I do think when we're sending horses like Crystal Ocean, you know, he didn't win at two, but he was good second. I think he got an RPR of 80 that would be good enough to win a lot of maidens. When he was, you know, a consistent three-year-old and four-year-old, won a group one at five, you know, over 10, 12 furlongs, he was second, a close second to Two King Georges. When we're sending horses like him off as national hunt sires, that's not at all a criticism of Coolmore or any of them. They're just recognising the market. But I just think we've gone slightly too far when we're bracketing 10 furlong horses as, you know, potential national hunt sires. The same for Poet's Word. I mean, there wasn't a huge amount of demand for him, I believe, in his first season, and then he went to Boards Mill. But he's a beautiful looking animal, and he's you know, he's got top class form. He beat Cracksman in the Prince of Wales. But I think we have gone too far. But also I think, you know, speed is important. You know, we've got some fantastic speed sires. Like Dark Angel, who, yeah, he didn't race on at three, I believe, and look what he's done. I mean, he's been fantastic. So I think we've got to recognise that there's a challenge, but I don't think we should sort of slate people for wanting to breed speed horses. I just think we've got to find a way of diversifying the middle distance slash staying bracket.
So would you actually, would there be any changes actually that you'd sort of make? Because in other racing jurisdictions, I'm thinking of Germany, there are certain, I believe, sort of barriers to becoming a stallion. You don't think that's something we should consider in the UK or Ireland, or?
I mean, it's a difficult one because with a horse like Kodiak, he wasn't a black type winner. I mean, he was fourth in a group one in France and his, you know, later years, but his pedigree stood out and he is given a chance because of that. I think it's so difficult because if they hadn't taken risk with him, then he wouldn't be this, you know, phenomenon that he is today. So I think it's really, really difficult to judge. But I personally like seeing horses race beyond two if possible, potential stallion prospects, because I don't think a two-year-old career is the be-all and end-all. Personally, I like to see them prove themselves at three, or, you know, at least three. But I like to see them, you know, even four as well. I mean, some of the best horses, you just need to look at Frankel racing on at four. Like, you know, I know obviously Enable's not a stallion, but like, look how long she's raced. I know she's a mare, but, you know, there is a chance for horses to show their, you know, soundness and longevity. And I think it should be used more. Yeah.
I'm sure that'll be something that quite a few of the punters watching this might agree with. If you have any thoughts, do comments, please. And don't forget to come back for part three, where we'll be discussing the wider issues in racing as a whole. Welcome back to the third and final part of Betting People with Kitty Trice. Now, we've discussed her route into racing and her route into Bloodstock, but now we're going to discuss racing as a sport in general, because racing does face quite a few tough challenges. The first is prize money, which has been a theme for quite a few years, and actually I'm sure is something that many of you watching will have an opinion on. So first things first, Kitty, how can British racing fix its prize money crisis?
Difficult, because it's just everyone's got an opinion, and like, obviously it's a very sort of heated topic and unsurprisingly so. I do think we need to sort of, obviously it will have to take sort of a fairly significant overhaul to the system as it is presently, but I just think we need to sort of have a look at how the French do it, you know, look at the Australian systems. Obviously they'll differ and maybe it's not possible to apply here, but I just think we need to maybe get some sort of, I don't know, someone from a different body, like, you know, an international body who can sort of come and help, you know, bring some fresh ideas to the table. Because at the moment, I think we're sort of in, you know, we're stuck and it's going back and forth between the racecourses, the horsemen, BHA, and it's just not going very far. Obviously, there's the prize money increase from September the 1st, but, you know, with the uncertainties around COVID, I just wonder what's going to happen next. And I think we need to have, you know, a bold plan, clear leadership of what's going to happen next. And maybe someone from the international racing body can help with that.
And do you think that cutting the amount of fixtures we have, we do have quite a high amount of fixtures in comparison to other racing jurisdictions, could that help possibly? Or do you think the solution lies elsewhere?
I mean, the trouble with that is by cutting fixtures, inevitably they will be the lower grade races. And, you know, if you look at like the pyramid, the top 10%, you know, pattern rated performers, you know, pattern list races, group races. If we cut a load of fixtures, you know, the majority that'll be affected will be the class fives and six horses. And already, you know, we're hearing stories of them sort of being turned out or retired or, you know, not racing in a word. And I just think that will cause a whole host of issues, not to mention, like, you know, a potential welfare issue. And I don't know if it'll work possibly cutting fixtures, but it is an idea. But I just would worry about the lower grade horses at this stage.
Okay, interesting thoughts. I'm sure people will have their own opinions. Another big topic this summer has been rules of interference. We've seen it with quite a few high profile instances. And I think long before that Kevin Blake article, many people really did have a lot of dissatisfaction with British racist interference rules. If you were in charge, what changes would you make to UK stewarding as a whole?
Trouble is, you see a lot, some jockeys appealing and it being overturned. I mean, the amount of cases you've seen overturned, like, it's a concern that they get overturned so easily. I mean, depends on the severity of the incident, of course, but I would make a tighter loophole where that is concerned, where you have to take the punishment. I mean, whether it's accidental or not, you know, something needs to happen before, you know, there's a serious incident. And I would also consider, I don't know, I mean, you could look at, I mean, depending on where the horse is, whether the horse is the winner or not, and the distance. I mean, there is obviously the talk of disqualification and such, but is it really fair to the owner, the trainer, who haven't been involved in that? I mean, I think you have to look at the punishment for the jockey anyway, and whether that's including taking away the winning prize money, I don't know. I mean, maybe that's too harsh, but I just think something's got to be tightened up a bit. But obviously there's a fine balance, because, you know, I don't pretend to have ridden in as many races as these jockeys. I've only ridden in one, but yeah, there's a fine line, because these jockeys as a whole, like, there is for the most part excellent riding, but on these occasions where they're accidents, I mean, it needs to be taken seriously, and if necessary there needs to be, you know, some form of punishment.
I don't think many people disagree with anything that you've said there. Another wider issue for racing has been sort of the attraction, basically, of new fans and different fans. Something actually that all sports have been considering, I think, this summer. Is there anything that you would do to try and get racing to encourage new people to join the sport? Particularly looking ahead down the next 5 or 10 years?
It was obviously difficult with COVID and, you know, thus not allowing people to sort of congregate and stuff. But there's several things. I mean, I would open up, you know, to the public. Stud farms, obviously, they have their priorities, you know, which is breeding and foaling and, you know, looking after of the bloodstock. But, you know, during the summer, for instance, I think it would be great if people could see some of the mares, the foals, you know, that side of the racing, because obviously we see the horses in action on the track, and a lot of the time we see what happened when they retire. You know, the retaining of racehorses does a great job, but I think it, you know, people would love to see, or just from my opinion, I'd love to see you know, the horses beforehand. I mean, the farms have done a great job tweeting over the winter with the hashtag, like, Foal Friday, and you see all these foals out of sort of Old Stars and by Old Stars, and it's just wonderful. And another thing, which is not totally related, but there was a programme on a few years ago about Sir Henry Cecil and Frankel that was on Channel 4, and I think that did really, really well. Obviously, I think that'd be a great way to get more people into the sport. Like, you know, it's great at sort of letting people know who he was, who Frankel is, and, you know, it's easy to follow. And I think more programmes like that on mainstream channels would really help, especially if if they're like I am, sort of horse mad girl growing up and then seeing this, you know, fantastic trainer and racehorse, just watching that. So it's, you know, it can spark an imagination, it can spark some, you know, interest, I think.
Very interesting indeed. Coming to the end of this now, but actually something that I have been wanting to ask you about. Your one racecourse ride you referred to earlier was last year at Glorious Goodwood. The amazing story of Khadija Mella, I think, is not something anybody here will have missed or forgotten about. But just describe sort of the whole experience, you know, the lead up to the race, what it was actually like to come hurtling down the chute at Goodwood, and you know, sort of the amazing story, because you were actually there, you know, you had a first person view of it. What was it like?
It was a complete blur of madness. I was actually, like, I get quite nervous about stuff really, and it was actually fine. The night before we checked into the hotel, I found that I had a car with my silks on and my name and my own driver. I was just like, oh my goodness, like, this is the dream. He was a lovely guy. And we were picked up and driven to the racecourse and back the morning of the race quite early. And we walked the course, which was quite an experience. It was walking the course. It was so quiet, and just, you know, I didn't quite know or quite believe that it was going to be that busy when, you know, even when we started to fill up. And the most nerve-wracking bit was going into the parade ring, and I had in the weighing, I panicked because I couldn't find my saddle. I was like, where's my saddle? But anyway, that was all. I went into the parade ring with my family, who were all there, and like there was crowds everywhere, which was incredibly daunting, very strange. I felt like I was sort of famous. It was just bizarre. And at that point, it was really starting to kick in. I was just like, I don't know if I can do this. I was like, it actually hit home that I was about to sort of get on horse and ride in this race. And but I managed to get on, went out, went down to the start. One of the lads from Chris Gordon's yard trotted him up, which, you know, that was the first step over, getting down. I just wanted to get down and not fall off. And then we were circling, and in previous years, the start had been a problem, like messy, and we were told, you know, for goodness sake, don't mess this up. And I was just like, oh gosh. And my horse, he had done this before, so I was just like, I'm in safe hands. And we started, he was a bit slower, but I literally, because I didn't sort of go out there to do anything other than stay on and complete, which is weird because I'm quite a competitive person, I could actually enjoy it. Like, you know, it did go quite quickly, but it didn't feel as mad as I thought it would. It was a bit of a blur, but it was great fun, actually. I really enjoyed it, and the aftermath was fantastic because all that build-up was gone. You could just enjoy it, knowing you'd done it, knowing you'd raised that money, and I'd love to do it again. I really would, actually. Looking back, it was brilliant, and Goodwood were superb. I had an amazing bunch of girls to ride with. You know, Khadija won. It was fantastic for the sport. We got so much sort of fantastic, positive publicity out of it. And if that can just attract more people like Khadija into the sport, because obviously the sport, you know, it is majority, you know, we do need to attract a more diverse audience. And hopefully with Khadija, that we've planted a, you know, the first steps of doing that. And I really hope it, you know, down the line, more girls like Khadija will do it, because it's just fantastic.
I think a wonderful note on which to first of all apologise for the slight link break up there, and of course to end this Betting People with Kitty Trice. Thank you so much for your time, Kitty, and all the best at RRP Bloodstock next week.
Thank you.
Look out for our regular money back offers, including Pipped in the Post on selected horse racing and Saved by the 90s for all Premier League and televised championship matches. BeGambleAware.org. Over 18 only.